So they kept the theme going throughout his life.
You are listening to The Alzheimer's Podcast with Mike Good of Togetherness, your number one resource for practical tips and insights, empowering you and your family to live well with Alzheimer's. Hello and welcome to episode 12 of the Alzheimer's Podcast. I'm Mike Good of Togetherness. Welcome back for another podcast where my goal is always to empower you to maintain a positive experience, reduce and eliminate the need for medications, and make your time together with those you care for the best it can be. I am super excited for today's show because I have another special guest joining us to share their expertise with you. In the land of dementia, as my guest refers to it, sometimes it can be hard for us to connect with our loved ones while adding joy and creating loving memories together. To help us better connect in the land of dementia and learn to enjoy the moment, I've asked author, speaker, and dementia advocate Deborah Schaus to join us. Hello, Deborah, and welcome to the show.
Hi, Mike. I'm just delighted to be talking to you.
Yeah, it's wonderful to have you here today. And Deborah's coming to us from Kansas City, Kansas or Missouri? I forget.
Missouri.
And I'm in San Diego County, California. So now before we get into the conversation, Deborah, I'm going to share a little bit more about you with our audience. You'll find Deborah's writings in a variety of publications, including the Washington Post, the Huffington Post, the Chicago Tribune, Women's Day, and on her own site, dementiajourney.org. And Deborah has been featured in many anthologies. Now, I had to look this word up. That's a collection of literary pieces, including more than 4 dozen chicken soup books. Deborah and her partner, Ron Zoglin, raised more than $80,000 for Alzheimer's programs by donating all proceeds from her initially self-published book, Love in the Land of Dementia, Finding Hope in the Caregiver's Journey, to dementia-based nonprofits. Deborah's newest book, Connecting in the Land of Dementia, Creative Activities to Explore Together, features dozens of experts in the field of creativity and dementia. These innovators share ideas that engage the creative spirit so care partners and people living with dementia can continue to experience meaningful moments of connecting. So Deborah, if you want, please go ahead and just get started by sharing with us and the audience what inspired you to write this book and become a dementia advocate.
Well, thanks for asking me, Mike, and thank you for that introduction. When my mother had dementia, it was initially a big struggle for me accepting it, as I'm sure it has been for many of your listeners. And as part of going through that grief process and feeling my losses, I came to an understanding that I wanted to stay connected with my mom no matter what, and I wanted to find the gifts and blessings in this journey we were on together. And that began my quest to find new ways to stay connected. I think that happens with all of us when the old ways of, you know, my mom and I would play Scrabble, we would chat, we would go to the movies. When those old ways weren't working, I needed to look for new ways. And so I searched for different things. And then my partner, Ron's parents, both were living with dementia after my mom passed on. So we were constantly experimenting with what is going to work for connecting with my mom, with Ron's mom, with Ron's dad. And that really inspired me to start asking questions from experts in the field. And it was a fascinating process, learning from people all over the country, all over the world, creative ways we can stay connected while we're in this journey.
I think that is one of the hardest things for the family to understand and move past, is that connecting with a loved one with dementia will not probably never be the same as it was before, because their abilities are changing, and that adapting to it, as you talk about in several of your writings that I've read, is so critical for people to learn and embrace.
It really is. And one of the things that happened for me with my mom, there was a newness to our relationship. My mom had been a very, little bit of a stern personality and not so affectionate. But when she got deeper into dementia, she became more affectionate. She became sillier. And so one of the things I got to do with her that I had never gotten to do in our, quote, ordinary lives, mm-hmm. was gaze into her eyes. We sat and looked into each other's eyes. It was a very deep spiritual experience. And I was so grateful for that experience. It only came after I finally let go of trying to drag Mom back into reality, mm-hmm. that was so frustrating for her and for me. So I'm really grateful that I could, you know, really appreciate who she was throughout her life.
That's an incredible experience and a benefit that I've heard, for lack of better words, saying benefit, that I've heard other caregivers convey, that once they've done that and they've stopped trying to force their loved one back into the old reality, if you will, that new love and affection is able to come out. And that's an incredible benefit of that relationship. I just want to ask you, Deborah, what other benefits are caregivers and families going to experience by getting this, the information in your books and what you share?
Well, I think, Mike, for all of us, we want to stay connected with the people we love. And so what I have loved so much about talking to the experts in this book and writing the book and then using the information is there are so many different ways to do this. They're easy to adapt. If one way doesn't work, then we turn to another way. And I learned that even when the rational mind isn't necessarily functioning at its highest level, creativity and imagination can still rule. And in fact, sometimes because a person's filters are less intense when they're living with dementia, they're more open to creativity. And so you get this flourish of new thoughts and new ideas. So some of the things I talk about in the book that I found very useful, some I did with my parents and parents-in-law, some I do with friends that I'm visiting. Of course, music is a big one, Mike. Singing is a wonderful thing that any of us can do at any time together. And there's a great study from Finland where they learned that just adding singing into your everyday life can reduce stress and increase connection. And of course, you don't have to remember the words. Humming is another great way to sing along, to connect, because that increases your breathing. So thinking of a simple song that you may both know. I have a friend living with dementia, and the other day I sang with her our high school fight song, which at that moment we both remembered, and it was a really bonding experience. So what I really appreciate about all these exercises, you're doing them together. It's not one person doing them, you're doing them together. And as studies are increasingly showing, arts, movement, laughing, singing are good for all of us. And they, again, lower our stress, they increase our mood, they make us feel connected in a meaningful way. And that's all what all of us really want.
That's true.
And tell me when you want more examples. I have many examples when you're ready.
Okay. But I want to touch on something that you mentioned. Well, first of all, the benefits are good, as you, in your book says that there's that mutual exchange, and you give to the person with dementia and they give back to you when you get to these moments of finding joy together. And I think that's important for caregivers to understand, that who are struggling and feel like it's just a one-way street and there's no positive experience in it, that if they stay creative and adapt and try new things, and that they can and feel those good emotions again and bring back that love.
Yes, Mike, I really appreciate what you just said. And I think, you know, flexibility is so important. So if one thing just isn't working, I know one time my mom I was spending time with my mom, and I had our day planned, an amazing day she would have loved. And she was not in the mood. She was just staring outside and wishing for my dad. And I wanted us to paint and make cookies. And, you know, I had to say to myself, okay, let's go outside. She's staring outside. Let's go outside. Let's talk about my dad. And it worked out well as soon as I let go of my carefully made plans. So I think that's something that is a gift that we get from being with people who are living with dementia, the gift of flexibility, humor, patience. Many people I've talked to feel very rich from having to explore their own skills at these things.
That's true. I've experienced that myself. I didn't. I didn't realize how much compassion and empathy that I could have, among other things, in learning there. You one thing when you talk about your mom and the experience there, in one of your articles, I believe it was Engaging During the Dementia Journey, you talk about how you would pack a satchel with what you called potential connectors. And as you said, yes, not the electrical connectors, you said, which I thought was great. But I thought that was a really great idea to share with families about how they can put together a satchel, if you will, of things that they can take in or be with their loved one. But so I'd love it if you'd kind of elaborate on that. But also, it kind of goes along with how you, I think in the same article, you said that sometimes you just wouldn't even be able to open the satchel because, as in the example you just gave, your mom wasn't in that mood or she was in a different place where you needed, yes, to adapt and just kind of let go of the flow.
Yes. I think sometimes people lose connection with people who are living with dementia unnecessarily because they're worried they won't know how to talk to them. They won't know what to talk about. When communication becomes more complicated for people who are living with dementia, they sometimes lose their friends. And so there's so many ways to communicate once we get used to that idea. So you think about, what does the person I'm going to visit enjoy doing? And pack some of those things in your bag. My mom occasionally liked to watercolor. I had a very simple watercolor set in my bag. She liked to look through old pictures. She didn't know who people were, and I had long ago learned to not ask her. That was frustrating. But again, borrowing from brainstorming and borrowing from Anne Bastien's time slips to look at a picture and enjoy it and say, hey, what does this make you think of? Or what do you think that person's name is? Where there's open-ended questions, no right or wrong answers. You can do the same thing with art. It really boosts your energy and your brain to look at art together. And so you can bring a computer and look at pictures on the computer, bring an art book, a couple Norman Rockwell pictures with scenes that might resonate with the person you care about, and just look at the picture and say, hey, what do you think that dog is doing in the picture? And where do you think that family in that old-fashioned station wagon are going? And why does that little kid in the back look so cross? And just start creating a story together. And again, it's all together. Bringing music that you both like to listen to is another great tip. Bringing tactile things. If there's somebody who enjoys fabric or a guy who enjoys putting things together, bringing some pipes you can fit together. I love this because it's unlimited creativity for both parties. Some people like to bring lotion. It's a really soothing way to touch hands and rub a little scented lotion if the person enjoys that. So those are just a few tips. But I think you can see, you can vary it to adapt to what you both enjoy doing together.
That's true. That's a great idea. And it made me remember how people have what are called memory boxes to help do that similar thing. And I guess I had never envisioned carrying the memory box with you, or the satchel full of connectors, if you will, with you, yes, to the memory care, or to or just in your own home. That's just an excellent idea and thought. Another thing, Deborah, that you've got me thinking about there is how, I believe it was in an article you wrote about hobbies, and there was another one about where a lady had created a garden for her residence. But the thing was to remember and to observe what about the activity or the hobby brings that person joy. For instance, with gardening, I think in the article you said, is it getting your hands in the dirt, or is it the fruit that finally bears? I think that's important for families to remember.
I do too, Mike. And I think for all of us, as we all grow older and change, you know, we constantly have to adapt ourselves as per our physical and mental condition to the things we love. And it's no different for people who are living with dementia. So you don't need to give up hobbies. You just need to amend them so they meet your current needs. And there's a wonderful story in the book from Mara Botonas, who wrote a book called When Caring Takes Courage, about how she helped her grandfather stay involved in golf throughout his life. He was an avid golfer. And there did come a time where first he needed compassionate friends to play with. And when he could no longer really navigate walking the course, she would get a golf cart or get a friend with a golf cart and ride him around the golf course. And he particularly loved going in the early morning when it had just been mown, and so there was those smells. And then when that didn't work, they set up a putting green at home. And then they moved to watching golf together and commenting on it. So they kept the theme going throughout his life. And it was good for everyone.
Yeah, that's a great story and a great example how to adapt the activity to the loved one. I love that example. I can't right now. I'm sorry. I'm just thinking about my garden and what gets me happy out there. And it is playing in the dirt. And it is when my tomato plant starts growing. It's the smell I get on my fingers from touching my tomato plant.
I love you mentioning that. And you know, I think the other part of that, you mentioned gardens, and I was just talking to one of the people in my book, Lori Condit, who has a garden that her memory care residents run. And one of the pleasures from that garden is they are giving fresh produce to disadvantaged people in their community. And so besides, you know, watering and harvesting and packing and planting the seeds, doing all the gardening stuff, they have that additional feeling of purpose, mm-hmm. of giving back, of contributing to their community in a really meaningful way. And so I think that's another part of having a vegetable garden, is you have something concrete to share with other people. Because so many times that sense of purpose and meaning is taken away from people who are living with dementia. And we all thrive with that.
That's a great point. And I wrote an article myself about trying to maintain and create purpose with the activities. And I've seen that from others. Heather of Creative Care, a friend of mine on Facebook, her and her mom make flowers out of crepe paper, and they're just extremely beautiful. And they do things with rocks and shells, and they give them away. And Heather shares, and you can see the joy her mom gets by sharing those. And I also highly recommend to families to definitely get out there and look into your community and see what needs there are that you can help give back to, such as the vegetables, or maybe it's shoe donations, or you know, doing other things with your neighbors to help keep everyone active, because the caregiver too needs to be getting out of the house and staying active.
You're absolutely right. And I love what you said about, you know, families looking into the needs in their communities. A friend of mine who is living with early onset dementia knew she had wanted to keep busy. She's very craft oriented. And so every twice a year, she creates note cards. She creates little gift baskets for women and their families who are in a domestic violence shelter. Mm. And that has been a source of great joy for everyone. And when we go to visit her, we say, "What craft are you doing today?" And she teaches us a craft. And so then again, it's something for us all to do together And we get that sense of we're giving back to the community in a way we wouldn't know how to do because we aren't really crafty oriented without her assistance. So it's a great example of what you just recommended to people, Mike.
That's great. Thank you for that example. I would like to know what's something that surprised you or you discovered while writing your book.
Well, I learned so much when I was writing, but one of the things, you know how you kind of know something in your heart, but you don't fully realize it? When I was talking to all these different people, I talked to more than 70 people in writing this book. One thing I realized is how much alike we all are, regardless of our mental or brain status. So we all want to keep our relationships with people we care about. We all want to have meaning and purpose. We all want to give back to our communities. And it really brought it home to me so strongly how important all those things that each of us want every day are, they still are, whether or not you're living with memory loss.
It made me think of an example you gave. It's not totally related, but how your mom still was drawn to a yellow rose in the garden, how she still found joy from touching the leaves of that rose. And, you know, and I too would be drawn to that yellow rose probably. And that was just another incredible example that you provided in one of your articles.
Well, thank you. And there were several people I talked to who really viewed nature as medicine, nature as integral into having a good and meaningful life for all of us. And Gareth Chalfont was one of these people, where he talked about how important it was to be outdoors, to be where you can see outdoors. A friend of mine whose husband was living with dementia just looked at her living room to say, okay, how can we bring sunlight in? How can we be looking out? They loved bird watching. He could no longer tromp around in the woods. They set up bird watching in their living room. They moved their sofa so they could see out. They put bird feeders, a bird bath. They got their binoculars, their bird book, more important, their coffee thermos of coffee that they always had. And so it was, they continued doing this hobby they both loved, except they were sitting indoors.
Right. That's great. I definitely agree with that and think that that's excellent ideas and suggestions that all families should consider. You want to definitely try to bring the outdoors in if you can't get outside, and you definitely want to try to make the outdoors a daily event if you can. And maybe that's just sitting together on the patio, hearing the sounds and smelling the neighbor's barbecue, but it's just so spiritual for all of us.
That is true, Mike, and you've done some beautiful writing on nature. I love the way you're mentioning the different senses, because I think that is really important, of hearing the nature sounds, the different aromas that come to us when we're outdoors, the different textures of the pine cone, the dirt, the rose petal. All those are very evocative, and they can be a catalyst to a really interesting conversation.
That's true. The conversation is, even in the beginning, you talked about the fights. I'm bouncing around. I apologize.
I love bouncing around.
But you talk about the fight song and how that, can you imagine the memories that would come back and the conversation that would come back from hearing your fight song again, or the memories from the pictures you pulled out of your satchel? The conversations could just be so, so loving and inspiring. It's just incredible.
Yes, yeah. It is. And again, I really appreciate what you're saying, that sometimes we need a catalyst for conversation, and sometimes that conversation may be fanciful. And one of the big things I learned with my mom, as I realized her communication skills were diminishing, I really paid attention to every word. Now, most of the time, we don't do that with people.
Right,
we don't need
right.
to, because there's words spilling out everywhere. But that was one of the things that I really focused on, is the gift of my mother's words and where what they meant and how grateful I was that she was able to have those words. And so, but even going beyond when she could no longer speak, there were still plenty of gifts going on. You know, one of the things I learned about that I've played with some is the connection you can have with puppets. There is a woman that we visited in New York, Veronica Kaninska, who is just excellent at therapeutic puppetry. And one of the things she was saying is puppets have no judgment, they have no boundaries. And so puppets can communicate in a way that sometimes people can't. So I thought that was a fascinating thing to know, that those puppets, you can pick a puppet who has something like a dog puppet or a grandmother puppet who will have a connection with the person. That puppet can sing. That puppet can move. The person living with dementia may move along with them. So there are so many different things you can do with puppets. And it can be a simple sock puppet if you don't want to buy anything.
Interesting. I like to, after our conversation here, I might want to learn more about that, because I'd want to understand how we keep that dignified and in an adult kind of, you know, theme. So
right. Well, I'll just mention one thing, and that is that puppets have been used for all ages throughout the century as a communication tool. Mm-hmm. And so we tend to think of them now as, you know, for children. But that's really hasn't been the way it was. So therapeutic puppetry is not a puppet show. Mm-hmm. It is more of a way to communicate, particularly with people who need a little extra cheer or who are having trouble to otherwise communicate.
Okay. Very, very interesting. I'm looking forward to learning more about that. So if you want, as we start to wrap up our conversation, Deborah, who do you think, or who would benefit the most from reading your book?
Well, I think family caregivers, professional caregivers, friends, anybody who wants to maintain and deepen their connection with someone who is living with dementia or to understand what those people are going through would benefit from the book.
And how do listeners find your book? Do you want to mention your website again for us?
Sure, I do. It's dementiajourney.org, and every week I post a creative blog with simple ideas to share with you. And the book, Connecting in the Land of Dementia, is on Amazon, or you can get it from your favorite independent bookseller.
That's awesome. And I did, while I haven't read the book, I did get on Amazon where you can preview the book, and I was shocked how much it let me preview, but
good.
But it left out key things, so people have to be motivated to try to buy it. And it's not expensive. It's only like $12, I think. So
yeah, it's a good price.
It's a very, very good price. But just from what I was reading, I kept getting drawn in and wanting to read more, which isn't usually, I'm not a very avid reader, we'll say. So, but anyway, just for our audience, please, I'll provide a link to them where you can check out Deborah's book. As we wrap up this episode, I'd like to thank you, Deborah, for a wonderful conversation on how we can create more joy and have loving memories and create those connections with our loved ones that we may be struggling to do. And I want to also give a thanks out to our audience for joining us today. Now, if you want to learn more about having and maintaining positive experiences while creating loving memories, be sure to check out episodes 4 and 5 of the Alzheimer's podcast. And also get over to Deborah's website, and you'll find links to all these resources in the show notes at togetherinthis.com/episode12. And if you're enjoying this podcast, you want to help me keep it active, please consider rating and leaving a review. It'll mean the world to me. And don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. And I can't wait to talk with you in episode 13, where I'll discuss assistive technology and the role it plays in dementia care. Bye now. You've been listening to The Alzheimer's Podcast with Mike Good of Togetherness. For more information and to get the resources mentioned in this episode, visit togetherinthis.com/podcast.
Bye.